Draft on Draft Podcast. I am your host, Corey Kinnon, alongside Dalton Miller, and we're going to put a bow on the Combine coverage today. Earlier this week, we've done a mock draft, two separate episodes there, picks 1 through 16 and then 17 through 32 in two separate episodes. So let's go ahead and put a bow on it. We're going to talk through some winners and some surprises at the NFL Combine. Again, winners is...
Look at us keeping it positive.
Yeah.
For the most part. But for the most part, keeping it positive. No,
for the most part. Yeah. Again, winners is always kind of combine winners is always kind of a nebulous kind of thing as well, because like if you were shocked that Shamar Stewart went out and did what he did, then like we might have been watching different tape. If you were shocked that Jahad Campbell went out and did what he did. But I do think there's an element of preparation that deserves to be rewarded.
I think that's a great point. So I know that we're skipping the introductions here, and I'm inserting myself into this conversation before you really brought me in. But I went to Michael Johnson's performance in Dallas back in the Trayvon Diggs draft year. I think it was what was that, 2020?
2020, yeah.
Yeah, I went back then. And I also followed around David Robinson, the wide receiver trainer in Dallas for a while, and watched like Jerry Jeudy and those guys train. The preparation that I saw at that one day of Michael Johnson performance where they were just going over combine stuff, like, because the other stuff is all like with David, it was all positional drill stuff. That was the real football stuff. I don't think we understand enough these rookies that are coming in, how little actual football training they get, because they spend literal weeks
on
getting their
starts.
Footwork down for 40 starts. Like this stuff is so technical, and that's why like I understand the 40 stuff. I understand like getting in a tizzy when a guy runs bad, but in my opinion, with all of the tracking data that we have now for on-field speeds and things like that, I care way less about athletic testing at the combine, and I think it's at a point now where I really only value the combine for medicals and for interviews. How are guys interviewing? How are guys doing? Like, so that's how I feel about the combine. It's still awesome to watch. Mm-hmm. But I do think overall the importance of these things has gone down quite a bit, because we already know these guys are great athletes or bad athletes for the most part.
Yeah, teams going to the event with like 80% of their questions already answered. And the 20% that they, the 18 of the 20% they don't have, they're getting behind closed doors.
And yeah, and like what you said, I think the big thing we can take from it is kind of the preparation for what you do to get ready for it. Like if you go out and you look like crap doing the 40 and you look like crap doing your agilities or you can't jump, like what were you doing to prepare for this?
Right.
And who... It also shows who you have in your corner, because like who was helping you make these decisions, brother? Why did you test? So that's kind of where I stand with it.
Yeah, completely agree. And that's not to say that we shouldn't celebrate. Like going back to the 2024 combine, watching Xavier Worthy break the combine record live in person was awesome. It was awesome. Like there was a chill over the whole crowd. Like the whole crowd was erupted. So like that's not to say like we shouldn't celebrate guys who go out and ace the biggest job interview of their lifetime,
which is why we're talking about it.
Right. But counting it twice is like, I'm not gonna double count that Shamar Stewart's really athletic, because I knew he was extremely explosive already. Like, so that's kind of what we're talking about. So let's dive into some winners regardless.
Well, yeah, let's talk about winners. Yeah. Us for telling you that he was going to be a 10-0 Raz guy.
yes indeed. Let's start at the quarterback position. I know some people really liked what Jackson Dart did. For me, that first group of quarterbacks, I didn't think that any of them could really spin the football. really generate any juice to drive the ball deep down the field or outside the numbers. Dart did do a good job, probably the best job. He looked the best prepared of, like, he was on script. He knew what the script was. He knew where to leverage the football, and he threw the ball accurately. So he had a really good throwing session. I'm going with Jalen Milroe, though, in terms of the combine winner at quarterback, because based on what he did at the Senior Bowl and how he looked at the Senior Bowl versus how he looked at the combine was night and day in terms of his feet, getting the ball out on time. It was a night and day difference. And I've talked about this and I've written about it a little bit. It was like, oh, about what the purpose of perhaps the combine is, or not the combine, but the Senior Bowl is. He's training with Jordan Palmer. Jordan Palmer is a very well-known quarterback coach. What if, and I said this on a Browns pod, what if Jordan Palmer and Jalen Milroe went into the Senior Bowl saying, don't worry about the result. Let's just focus on a process, on a process. And that process being work on your lower half, work on your feet, work on your pure drop back. I don't care how it looks. I don't care what the result is. Let's just go in and hone on that. And what if they didn't care that he went out and looked awful at the Senior Bowl because they were intently working on one thing? And then they come to the combine and it looks way cleaner. Like, what if that was their goal? Because I do think that a lot of these coaches, especially at the quarterback position, are more process oriented. They need to be more process oriented than result oriented. And I think because of everything we've heard about Jalen Milroe is that he is a hard worker. He's an A+ character guy. He is an absolute grinder. Like, what if, I'm not going to compare him to Josh Allen or Aaron Rodgers. Those are the two kind of guys that we hear about who have really reconstructed their throwing motion, really reconstructed their game. They're absolute psychos, but like, what if he has a gym psycho like Jalen Hurts? Jalen Hurts like has figured out how to win at the NFL level despite of his deficiencies. So like, what if he is that kind of football grinder that he figures this thing out? And I think that's a quarterback I'm still willing to take a chance on, to be honest.
Yeah, especially if you are in a position where you don't have to start him immediately, mm-hmm. which you absolutely can't start him immediately. Yeah. And we saw
the flashes.
We did. I at one point of
the Georgia game happened. Yeah.
The Georgia game, and not just the Georgia game, but the Vandy game. Everything in the first half of the season I thought was pointing up towards a QB1 talk. Mm-hmm. And then it fell off a cliff. And part of that could just be confidence and losing a little bit of it. And so I think for me, that's where I fall with him. If you can put it all together and find some consistency, if you can improve the fluidity in his upper half, because at the end of the day, and this kind of goes back to the Jalen Hurts conversation as well, he's not super fluid. You know what I mean? Like as a passer, he doesn't really create as a passer all that much. And when we talk about creative ability, we're not talking about being able to get outside of the pocket and throw. Any quarterback really can do that. And honestly, some quarterbacks are just as good, if not better, at throwing on the move than they are in the pocket. It's a very natural feel for athletes. I always, and I'm obviously not that good because I'm talking on a podcast and was never even a college quarterback, but I always felt more comfortable throwing on the move, particularly to my left. And so for me, I think that it's the arm angles and ability to flick it out there that isn't really there. But then when you run a 4.4, you don't really need all that creativity because then you can just outrun.
Create a window with your legs. Yeah.
Exactly. Definitely somebody worth taking a shot on. We are at 10 minutes. We have like 25 other names. We are being way too long-winded with this, but it's quarterback, so it's a really important position to talk about. Running back. Quinshon Judkins has to be the winner. Somebody that we thought would test, you know, pretty well, but needed to test pretty well. Neither of us really love his tape. And so being a top tier athlete was necessary. Mm-hmm. We will talk more about him on tomorrow's episode as well. So we don't need to get into the weeds on him, but 4.48 at 221. Great 38.5-inch vertical, 11-foot broad. Like, this dude's explosive. And we knew he was explosive. for us, and we don't really care about agility drills. Not many people are doing agility drills these days at the NFL Combine. And he wouldn't have done very well at agilities anyways. It's just not that that's part of what we dislike about him as a prospect. So, yeah.
And there's no test for your eyes in the combine either. So, Moving on to wide receiver, Matthew Golden, Texas. This is an easy one. The second fastest combine 40-yard dash of the entire group, the entire 320-some prospects. Again, I still don't think he's a 4.3 guy on tape. That slant, the first drive against Arizona State shows you that he got hawked. So, like, I do think that's an element of, again, training a great start out of your 40 and knowing how to dominate an event. But again, him not being a 4.3 guy on tape doesn't dissuade me from him, because I've raved about Matthew Golden for months now, and I love Matthew Golden and how refined.
You were one of the first, legitimately one of the first.
And so, like, that doesn't dissuade me, but, like, what this does is it shows me this guy's a grinder, this guy's a preparer, this guy's going to go out and he's going to attack anything. So he's going to go first round, I think.
Yeah.
So there's some wide receiver one talk that would still feel pretty gratuitous to me, but he's earned the right to be up in that conversation.
But is it? Maybe that's a after draft for tomorrow.
That's fair.
Because is it? Because we really liked his tape. Mm-hmm. Like, we really liked his tape. We thought he was a very technically refined wide receiver, a ball winner. Not the best size in the world, obviously, but being able to play and win on the outside. And then you test like that as well. What is it, like, what is dissuading us at this point?
That's fair.
Yeah. Terrence Ferguson at tight end. Oh, my God. Top tier aesthetic on the field. And I think that top tier aesthetic, a lot like Ricky Parizol a year before, testing like a freak. And I thought that Parizol was a really fluid, explosive athlete. Like, I thought he was pretty good. He tested better than I thought he would. Terrence Ferguson, very much the same way, tested better than I thought he would. Tested a little bit underweight than what I thought he would be. I thought he would be closer to 255, 247. And a little bit more of a move tight end anyways. I mean, he plays in line at Oregon as well. You didn't see that type of athleticism on tape. And which is fine. Like, I thought he was a good athlete. Not a great athlete. He seemed to me like that early day three type of tight end. And I think if you can get him early day three at that athleticism, even if it's a late day two now. Here's the thing. I say I don't care about athleticism or the NFL combine. They throw everything out the window at tight end. We know for a fact the correlation between athleticism, specifically with RAS, and success at the NFL level is very high. There is a correlation. It might not be causation. Like, it's not the only thing, but it is worth your time as an organization to bet on athleticism at tight end. Mm-hmm. And Terrence Ferguson's got it, plus the top tier aesthetic. So let's go for it.
Yeah. Yep. Offensive tackle. Let's have a conversation here. We've continued to say that the New England Patriots need a left tackle, but there's no good left tackle to take it for. Do we think that's the case still today?
You know, Ben Solak, I saw on one of the websites, can't remember which one it was, and might have been in one of my quick journeys over to the X, said that behind Hunter, Will Campbell is 1B in this class.
If well, that wasn't even the offensive tackle I was talking about.
I know it's not, but that's what I'm saying. Like, if we have guys talking about Campbell and we have freaky athletes like Mbao, who is the winner from this. I mean, and Will Campbell can be a winner, but for us, Will Campbell's going to be in the surprise category because we didn't think he was going to test that way. I mean, he played right tackle, and I'm always leery about flipping a guy like that, because It is a completely different skill set. And this is something that I wanted to bring up when we talk about like guys like Ryder Rosengarten. There's no shot with his left hand being his outside hand that he could have survived at left tackle. And it brings up a very important point. There are people who are more ambidextrous, just generally. My dad writes left-handed. He does a lot of stuff with his right hand, but it can do pretty much everything else with both hands at a decent level. I am almost completely right-hand dominant, right side dominant. I wouldn't be able to play left tackle, but I could play right tackle because I need that outside hand. I can survive with the inside hand being my left, but I could not survive. And that's what I'm talking about here when I'm talking about guys like Armin Membau. We just don't know. He might be ambidextrous. He might be able to play left tackle. But if you're that freaky of an athlete, mm-hmm. why were you playing right tackle to begin with?
Yeah. All right. Ottagard. But yeah, Armand Membau, our winner there before we close out. Unbelievably explosive. The loudest 40 that I've ever heard in my life as well. Did you like turn the audio on?
I didn't know. I didn't.
Well, you got to do that. Like, it is like thunderous. At 336, what he's doing, dude. A thunderous 40-yard dash. Guard. One of the best combine videos that I've ever seen. Somebody took Tate Ratledge's 40-yard dash and put Freebird in the background as his mullet is flowing in the wind. And it's an amazing video. George's Tate Ratledge, dude. He could have fallen under surprise here, too, because I don't think either of us thought he was that kind of athlete. And maybe he did have an ankle injury early in the season, so maybe. But even his 2023 tape, I didn't think was, like, that athletic. But, yeah, Tate Ratledge, explosive, fast, didn't see it. Smoothing on-field drills. So this is firmly a day two guard and like potentially a top 64 guard at this point.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me. Do you think that the mullet makes him more aerodynamic? We see the mullet being a big thing in baseball. Obviously, you wear a helmet in football, so it doesn't really matter. Your aerodynamics are thrown off by that huge piece of metal that you have and plastic and composite that you have on your head. But maybe the mullet is actually like a real thing, a real aerodynamic thing, you know, kind of taking some drag off of your head. It's a better kind of like in Formula One with the way that the air flows through the side pods and back through. Maybe that's what the mullet is doing for these kids who are all doing this for baseball season. And just because they wear hats and the mullet does still flow outside of the back of the hat. So just a thought that I had there real quick.
I love it.
And staying with his teammate, Jared Wilson at center. Good gosh.
Running faster than some of the tight ends.
These Georgia dudes, and we're going to get to this later as well, but Georgia dudes and like surprising the crap out of us with either unbelievable or awful testing numbers. Like, remember Elijah Holyfield? Like, coming out.
Oh,
like,
my gosh, a 4.9. Maybe 40, not a great athlete. Yeah.
Like, he's been like a 4.8. What are we doing here?
And who's the corner that still went first round, but he tested DeAndre Baker? Do you remember DeAndre Baker's combine? Yeah, like horrible testing numbers. Yeah.
But yeah, 4.8 for Jared Wilson, 9.98 overall, and 3.10 at center.
It's a good size.
It's a good size. That's good numbers.
And he's probably the first, depending on how you see Marcus Bowe, he's probably the first center off the board.
Yeah. It's a weird center class.
Very weird
center class. Center class.
Defensive tackle. My guy, we've talked about him quite a bit on this podcast, but Indiana defensive tackle CJ West, man. Predominantly a nose tackle all 5 years of his college career, to go out and run a sub-5 and jump 33 inches in the vertical jump as a one tech. I talked to his agent at Shrine a little bit, and they think that he can transform his body and play 3 tech. Testing like that, I don't know if I would put it against him to show a little more alignment versatility than what he did in his college career.
Yeah, and I've heard a little bit about him.
Great.
Even outside of that, I didn't talk to his agents at the combine. I obviously was not there, or his agent, but I have heard a little bit of 3 tech talk with with CJ West, and he's just a really interesting player overall. He's fun, man.
He is very fun. I think he's probably still an early day three player, like really early four, but it wouldn't shock me if he slipped into to the comp pick range and the back end of day two at this point.
Defensive tackle is always really tough because you kind of get locked into a role in these college defenses and you don't get to show what you really are. So like maybe if he's going through and they're able to kind of see through private workouts or the combine testing or whatever, and a team sees like we can make him a little bit more of a gap shooter, a little bit more disruptive instead of playing the role that he played at Indiana, maybe, you know. So I think that's an interesting thought for later. Like, what can we project outside of things, or how do we project outside of things that we did not see in college, specifically because of the way that the defense or all the way that the offense was run at that school?
For sure. Edge rusher. I mean, do we need to spend any time at all talking about Shamar Stewart? Shamar Stewart. Okay. Linebacker, Jahad Campbell, the biggest winner of the linebacker group. The NFL Next Gen Stats introduced the Combine IQ, and the Combine IQ tracked Jahad Campbell as the fastest player in on-field drills at the NFL Combine of any position, the fastest player. And the night before he tested, he only ran a 4.52. But there's a lot of discussion about Indianapolis, the Colts switching from rubber pellets to coconut and cork in their turf to limit the amount of players tearing ACLs on their turf.
Tasty.
Really yummy stuff. And so it felt like kind of a slower track as well. But the night before, I was talking to a scout at one of the bars late at night, and he said, we have data that shows that we think this kid can run a 4.38. He didn't, obviously. But the tracking data is extremely impressive, both in NFL buildings and what Next Gen Stats calculated at the combine as well. We'll have some more draft conversation about Jahad Campbell as well. But based on intel that I gathered while I was there in Indy, I don't think this kid's making the top 20.
I don't think he should. I've been on record for a long time now talking about how much I love him and his growth this year as because at the end of the day, guys, like an athletic linebacker, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's cool. If your eyes are a half second slow, you're a slow linebacker, period. Yep. Doesn't matter if it's in run defense, if it's in coverage, if you are a half second slow with your eyes, you are a slow linebacker. And getting on the field more, playing more. And then, dude, the edge versatility that he has, too. And there was always going to be that edge talk with him because he did it a little bit. And he's got, like, kind of that longer-ish body type. Mm-hmm. At least, like, on the field, it looked like he had a little bit of an edge rusher build. When you have that versatility, and then you're also mirroring a wide receiver who's going to go or was going to go in the top 100 at one point.
Yeah, well,
that's you're freaky. You're freaky.
Big time.
And he ended up being freaky. Weird.
Yeah. Yep. Corner. I had heard rumors and I'm pretty sure he even said it himself, but we had talked about it a little bit. Maxwell Hairston was rumored to be the fastest player by the end of the combine. And he was the fastest player by the end of the combine. Ran a 4.28. Edged out Matthew Golden by 0.01 in the 40-yard dash there. Jumped 39.5 and nearly an 11-foot broad. So Maxwell Hairston is a player. I know you're not as high on his tape, but man, his transitional burst.
No, I love him. Okay, there you go. No, yeah. I absolutely love him. I loved his tape. I think that when we're talking about the like reactionary athleticism that you need at corner to be successful, he is that type of player that I love. It's very much in the realm of, you know, rest in peace, Jeff Gladney. Like, I loved Jeff Gladney's feet. I thought he was outrageous. Mm-hmm. And then you have the size and overall athleticism as well. My only issue with Hairston is, will he be able to play physically enough? And this is another question that I just have generally going from the college level, where there's a lot more catch and carry, there's a lot more physicality throughout a route stem. You're not able to be as physical at the NFL level, but you also kind of are. Like, you're not able to touch because it's illegal touching after 5 yards, but they do let those guys wrestle around a little bit. And I think when you look at a league that does not call offensive pass interference anyways, and shout out to them for not calling OPI because offense is more fun. Does Hairston have the requisite physical ability to survive on the outside? And that's my issue. Mm-hmm. Like, from a reactionary athleticism perspective, being sticky, I talk about it as like, yeah, a type of athleticism in man coverage to not look like you're following a guy around, but to look like you are a leopard stalking prey. And that to me is what he's able to do athletically. Like, no matter what you do in front of him, you're not quick enough to really test him. Mm-hmm. And that's what he has. And that's why I wanted to push back a little bit on the tape thing. I loved his athleticism. I just wonder if he's tough enough.
Fair enough. I think he's going to go first round in this class. I think there's going to be a team that
takes. I don't think you shouldn't. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I would absolutely make that call in the back half of the first round.
Yeah. All right. Safety. Nick Emenwori. We both have had Nick Emenwori as a top 10 player in this class for all season long anyway. And then at 6'3", a full 6'3", and a full 220, dude. Like, his numbers weren't fudged. A full linebacker out there doing that.
Your boy is bigger than your linebacker, our linebacker from Notre Dame a couple of years ago, who ended up being a Brown.
Jeremiah Owusu-Koromoa.
Yeah, Jeremiah Owusu-Koromoa. I kept wanting to say KOC, but that's definitely
that's
not
the
it.
Head coach of Minnesota Vikings, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, that's Nick Emenwori, man. What a special player. What a special. And again, just real quick, because we're already at 30 minutes here, almost. Talking about him strictly as an athlete is selling him short as a football player. And please don't do that, because I will yell at you very loudly online about it. Like, again, I think I talked about this on the podcast the other day. I'm very rarely like the I told you so, I'm better than you, I know more than you guy. Please, please do not discount his intelligence as a safety, as a back end guy. Don't do it. The dude's got everything that you want in a safety and more, period.
Love it. Love it. Love it. All right. Let's go to surprises.
And Brady Cook.
Run through these ones. Let's start with Brady Cook. Running a sub 4.6. Nice.
Yeah. I thought he was a pretty good athlete, but dude, sub 4.6 with elite explosiveness and elite shuttles. Like, dude ran a 7.
What did he measure at? What's his RAS as a tight end? Somebody run the numbers.
Well, he's only 215, so he would have to play running back. But as a
maybe it's like Josh McCown, who had to play slot receiver for the Lions that one time and caught a bunch of passes for him on a Sunday.
Hey, there you go. There you go. Let's run him as a wide receiver here real quick and see what his RAS would be as a wide receiver. 908 as a wide receiver.
Hey, 6'2", 214. That's a pretty decent size. That's a pretty decent sized dude.
Yeah, that's
Brady.
That's
if you're listening,
that's Cooper Kupp. Maybe Brady Cook is Cooper Kupp.
Rams, draft him.
9'6", 2 as a running back. 9'6", 2 RAS as a running back. Brady Cook, ladies and gentlemen, shout out to the man. Oh, because he's not a quarterback. Oh, good, cool. Anywho.
Running back surprise. Rocket.
Good Lord. I'm so happy. I'm so happy for him.
He looked like old Arkansas Rocket. He at the Shrine, and now he's doing some stuff.
Do you think he was playing heavier?
Potentially, and I know he also got hurt his last year at Arkansas. So, like, maybe all of 2023, he had some lingering stuff going on.
Yeah, but I didn't see the juice this year either.
Yeah, man.
I didn't see 4.46 juice.
What did he weigh in at?
217.
Well, that's thin for Rocket. Yeah.
He was listed at like 235 at Arkansas. Yeah. Maybe he slimmed down and found a little bit of juice. But I mean, listen, Rocket is a dude who, like, when we talk about three down backs, this is a dude who can do it all. I just thought he was lacking the juice. And so for me, he was very much a day three guy. This is proof, like on tape. I mean, I would have to look at tracking data to see like top speeds and stuff like that. I didn't see it on tape. And there were definitely times where he was able to break away and kind of couldn't. But this is a dude who they split out wide and had run routes and has a little bit of sideline, like toe drag swag. Like, this is a dude who can catch a ball around the sideline, has awareness. He's got a little bit of, he's a fun football player, man. And I'm just really happy after the injuries, because this is a guy that we were talking about in 2023, in the summer of 2023, being a potential first round pick. Mm-hmm. So shout out to him. Wide receiver surprise.
That's Johnson, man. Like, let's talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
Can you draft an 154 pound receiver who runs a 4.55?
Yes, because I watched him play football, but not high. I mean, we're talking about, there were people who had him as
like a second round.
People that I respect, like people that I really respect in this industry. People that, from the start of my love of this in 2016, 2017, were already established in the NFL draft world. We're talking about this guy being a top 50 player. Absolutely not. Can't do it. We are looking at one of the lightest players ever who ran a 4.5. And I thought he had the vertical juice. Like, that's the whole thing, is we watched him run by guys. Mm-hmm. Is that just a product of the Oregon offense being so good? I mean, we knew that the shuttles were going to be great. The dude has no weight to move around. We knew that if you don't touch him at the line of scrimmage, you're not going to. And that's the thing, like, can he be like a Cole Beasley type third down merchant at 150? Can he work over the middle at 150? We saw him work over the middle at Oregon, but he's 150. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a size guy, but guys, I'm
that's a pretty big outlier.
I'm 185 pounds, and I couldn't survive at the NFL level. And I'm 185 pounds, and I have some muscle. Like,
yeah. So that's generous. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, compared to an NFL player, it's it's just some muscle. Compared to your average person, sure, but it's
compared
just
to some your average person. Tez Johnson, yeah.
Oh yeah, compared to Tez Johnson, I look like a freaking Olympia pro. It's just firmly later on day three, and
yeah,
you hope that he's a good enough football player to overcome it.
Another player who didn't test well, and much to my chagrin, because I've been so in love with this player all season long, Texas tight end Gunnar Helm.
Rip.
And he did roll his ankle on a false start on his first 40, but
rip.
These guys did their vertical jumps before they ran, and he jumped 39 or 29 inches.
30. I have 30.
Inches. Okay, 30 inches. Not much better.
Not only that, but he's only 240.
At 240, and he didn't move as fluidly in the agilities as I thought he would either, because he's smooth on tape. I knew he wasn't explosive on tape, but 4.84, not explosive. And even if he doesn't roll his ankle, what does that drop to? A 4.74? Like, does he drop a full tenth off? Oh,
yeah, it's At a position where it really matters.
Yeah. Gunner.
Rip.
I still think he could be a solid tight end too in like a heavy 12 offense, but that's rough. Rough to swallow.
Rough for the tight end one talk.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that one, guys. We fudged up.
It happens.
Rip. Offensive tackle.
We saw him hurdle a couple guys earlier in the year.
Yeah, come on, man. Like, is he just an ankle biter merchant? Like, he knows who's trying to bite his ankles? That could be the case, I guess. But
must be.
Yeah.
That's good tape study right there.
Yeah.
Moving on to offensive tackle. Yeah, we talked about it earlier with Will Campbell, but we really wanted to talk a little bit about Jalen Travis and his combine, because that was very impressive for how big he is.
Again, the tape of the tape. And he is 6'7", but he's 340 though at 6'7". So like,
yeah,
there's a little bit of a natural anchor to him.
And 35 inch arms.
Yeah.
And 10 and a half inch hands. Like, this is a big human being.
Yeah. He's got some knee bend issues to figure out. And can he get more flexible to keep his chest a little less exposed and some things with his hands to clean up? But like, again, this is the prototypical offensive tackle you take a shot on at day three in a league that is starved for offensive tackle play. Like, this is your prototypical ball of clay you draft.
Oh, yeah.
A Princeton transfer as well. So, you know, the kid's freaking smart. He played in the Ivy League. So this is a kid that he's going to get drafted, where that might have been a question beforehand. Like, not only is he going to get drafted, he's probably going to get drafted top 150.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he'll go higher than day three because the tape is still the tape. But I mean, this guy's going to go early day three.
Yeah. I have another Daft on draft question.
Okay.
Thing that I will type in the private chat.
Cool.
But it will be about Will Campbell. So you guys are going to get like five.
You're going to have an expensive draft. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one. Tyler Booker at guard.
Yeah, so I could go either way on the Tyler Booker thing. No, I'm no longer mocking him to Houston ever because he's not playing outside zone. But he never played outside zone at Alabama and played almost exclusively in a phone booth. I did expect him to be tight.
Well, they got him on the move
a little bit
on like power stuff at the QB power stuff at Alabama.
So I expected him to be tight because he's a stiff athlete on tape, but he's explosive on tape. I did not expect him to come in with that level of lack of juice. I think he's still going to, I don't know if he's going to go first round anymore. I think he still goes top 50 to a team that's just going to say, go freaking play in a phone booth. Cincinnati, you know, like a team like Cincinnati would draft that kid in a heartbeat if he's there in the second round, I think. Kansas City just traded a guard. And their plan right now, from what I've heard, is to start Kingsley Suamatia at left guard. So Kansas, if he falls all the way to the back end of the second round, Kansas City would take it. Like, there are teams that exclusively want you to play in a phone booth that Tyler Booker will still play very well for, I think. Some of those more nuanced guys might be a little more hesitant, though.
Yeah. And being, I say, just 320, but like, this is a dude who was a lot bigger. And so if he was 340 and ran like this and was this level of non-explosive, we'd be talking about a completely different thing. But yeah, to do it at 320 is a little bit tough. It did nothing, just full transparency for guys in my Discord. They're still taking Tyler Booker. And that is a very much a you know ball type deal where, yeah, listen, we see the tape. We think he's a dominant player. It's in a phone booth, but I'm okay with that.
Yep. Agreed. Agreed, agreed, agreed. Edge rusher.
Landon Jackson.
Which you've been a little higher on Landon Jackson than I have all season.
Oh, yeah, for a while.
I have to tell you, I tried to write his report when I was, this is also like day three at Shrine, so like I was already kind of tired. I tried to write his report and watch his tape in my hotel room at Shrine, and I fell asleep trying to get his report done. I just was not moved or motivated. And it was the Missouri game, I think I was watching too, in the LSU games. So like, I was not that high. Did not expect him to be as explosive as he jumped. I expected the 40 times about what I expected, but did not see him as that explosive.
Yeah, you're looking at a 6'6", 265 pounder running a sub 4.7, which around where I thought he would be. The funny part about
40 inch vertical, though, my goodness.
Yeah. I didn't expect him to be that explosive. And I thought he was a pretty explosive player. Like the first step was definitely there. And I think that when you look at somebody like that, it's really interesting looking at the explosiveness that he showed in the vertical and the broad, which shows, in my opinion, that ability to get off of the line, that quick first step with the 10-yard split that was bad. 169 10-yard split, but a 4.68. So we're going from the 56th percentile in 10-yard split to a 89th percentile 40. So if he had a normal 10-yard split, if he was around a 4.62 or a 1.62, you're looking at a 4.59 guy.
Which could be just as he didn't train his starts.
Yeah, he just didn't have a good start.
Yeah,
he just didn't technically have it down.
Or his sword 20 is so good that he needs to put him in X and let him catch passes.
What's that?
I said, or his sword 20 is so good that you just put him at X and you let him catch passes.
Well, yes, 6'6", 260.
Let him run 260.
Let's move him to tight end.
Let him run down the field.
Yeah, 6'6", 260. Let's let him play tight end. But yeah, he's a little bit bendy. I like him.
He is flexible. He is flexible.
Yeah. Danny Stutzman at where? What? What? A 4.52? A 4.52? And listen, 233, a little bit lighter than I would have liked to see him come in, like as a what I thought on tape was just like a downhill basher. Now, I really like his creativity and his ability to get downhill, but you would have never, ever convinced me he was going to run better than a 4.6 ever. And the coverage or lack of coverage with his athleticism, yeah, sure, take him. See if he can turn around and run. But that's, again, another thing where it's a question of, like, you weren't really asked to do it very often. And a lot of linebackers in college football just aren't asked to do it very often. Yeah. So it's a maybe not a you can't do it, but just haven't done it type deal.
Yep. Next one, biggest surprise, Jahdae Barron. Again, I thought it was a 4.5 ground tape. Those Texas guys. And again, maybe what kind of, does Texas have natural grass on their home field?
Yeah, I think so.
But again, even in the bowl game, like against Arizona State with the golden thing, like he didn't look fast. But like maybe there's just a natural grass multiplier that these guys are playing a little bit slower than they might on turf. Jahdae Barron ran a sub 4.440 in elite combine performance. And I wrote this in my What I'm Hearing in Indianapolis article. He was a very popular player that was in conversation throughout the week, and it just seems like everybody loves Jahdae Barron. The person, the player, as an apex defender, as an outside corner, doesn't seem to matter. Like, this, pen him in top 32s of every mock draft from here on out, because he's going to go in the first round.
Yeah, as he should at this point. And we did it in the mock draft. I personally can't see Dan Quinn not drafting this guy with the versatility that he has already shown on tape as an inside outside guy
with that cornerback room.
A couple of safeties that are free agents, or one safety that is a free agent, and a couple of other guys in that secondary who are like safety corner hybrids. I mean, it's a wet dream for Dan Quinn. So very easy decision for him at that pick if they don't have an offensive tackle that they love there as well. And it's a pretty decent nickel class as well. The Tulane kid, I can't think of his name right now, but he tested crazy as well. Played in the slot for Tulane, was at the Senior Bowl. Really good player. Can't think of his name, but somebody else, like if they kind of strike out on Jahdae Barron or go offensive tackle, somebody that they could look at a little bit later. Surprises for you, I know, especially safety Malachi Starks. I think running a 4.5 is right about where I thought he would be. Being sub 200 pounds, which I did not expect, and being a 33-inch vert and a very, very bad agility is shocking to me.
Yeah, it is. So I want to check something out real fast. So Kyle Hamilton did have some explosiveness. He had a 38-inch vert and nearly an 11-foot broad. But he ran a 4.59, and his agilities were awful as well.
He was also 6'4".
He is 6'4", and 220. Yeah, but in the same vein as Kyle Hamilton, though, like, he's been an elite football player since he was 18 years old in his first ever game as a true freshman. Like, how much do we overthink Malachi Starks?
Man, this is actually a tough question, because I think we've seen the reactive athleticism from, and maybe it just comes down to, as a safety, it's going to matter a lot less because your reactive athleticism is more tied to your eyes than it is just your natural ability to mirror guys. Because we've seen him from time to time struggle when he's down in the slot against more athletic receivers. Well, we saw that with Kyle Hamilton too. Mm-hmm. And if you're not asking that guy to do that at the NFL level, if you let him play safety and you let him use his eyes, it's not going to be an issue, because we've seen it, like you said, for 3 years, not be a freaking issue. Mm-hmm. But at a very reactionary position in the slot, poor agilities and poor explosiveness is concerning. Mm-hmm. Is it concerning enough to, you know, drop him out of the first round? It better not, in my opinion. But I could see Malachi Starks being one of those dudes who ends up going a lot later than his tape suggests he should, mm-hmm. because he decided to test at the combine.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it's Grant Delpit, right? Grant Delpit was kind of the same way at LSU. Another guy who's also 6'4", 220, like 6'3", 220, big dude.
Yeah.
But played hurt at LSU. And then that was the COVID year too, so there wasn't a combine. And that was the second round, despite having like universal top 10 grades coming into the season. We'll see. But that's it for our combine coverage. Do you have anything
else? Yeah, that's it. 50 minutes later.
Yeah, 50 minutes later. So I don't think there's anything else we can add. I think we can just get out of here. This has been another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. We'll be back tomorrow with another pretty long edition of Daft or Draft. So those are always fun. So stay tuned for that.